Hi, welcome to the One-to-One Thing podcast. My name is Steve Wright, a seasoned IT manager and personal development coach, unpacking what it takes to have a meaningful one-to-one conversation at work, home, and in our head. We all live lives full of conversations that range from awkward to impossible. Join me as we learn to navigate the one-to-one thing. Destin, it's great to see you, bro. Thank you for making the time for us to get together on this very, very short noticed impromptu chat. And I think, you know, let me start by, before you introduce yourself, I just want to say that thank you for accepting my friend request. And we've got some mutual friends, and I think from our general chat, we got some kindred interests. So the floor is yours. Tell me what you do, where you do it, and how you do it.
Sure. So I think 3 years ago I got into depth psychology. It is a specific, like, depth psychology in general just means the unconscious, that you're digging into the unconscious. So the specific form of depth psychology that I came across is called archetypal self-psychology. The archetypes are patterns that are foundational to everyone. So, I mean, like a decade ago, getting out of high school, I got into personality type psychology stuff. So it was understanding every way that people could fall into a pattern that makes them discernible from other people. It was the study of how people are different. Archetypal self-psychology is the foundation of what makes us all similar in the unconscious. Oh. It's the wiring that we all share. So this was inspired by Carl Jung. He started this. He figured, okay, if people all fall into, like, low self-esteem is repeatable. Clearly more than one person has it. So it's going to behave similarly across different people. And he was a student of Freud. So he was like, okay, so there's a lot of mental stuff that goes on with people, and there are similar traits between these people. So there must be some kind of structure in the mind that we don't know about. And Freud thought that the unconscious was just this void alphabet soup of just scrambled nonsense. And Jung was like, that doesn't check out. That doesn't make any sense, man. So he sought out to figure out the structure of the mind, of the unconscious. And if we look at the, I don't think I've used this analogy before, but if we look at the mind like the ocean, because generally water is a symbol for emotions and the mind, there's a lot more of the ocean that the sunlight does not reach than there is that the sunlight does reach. Like, if you were to look at the whole depth of the ocean, maybe this top 8% might be like light will hit and the rest is just black. So if we use that as an analogy for the mind, that I feel that that's pretty accurate. And modern day therapy and psychology doesn't respect that as much. It's just what is measurable. They only deal with this top sunlight portion. So and I mean psyche is Greek for the soul. So psychology needs to be the study of the whole soul, not just what we can measure and put numbers to. So I am into the study of the full soul, the full all of it. Self-image, full total self-development, reaching full potential, whatever that means, and discovering what that means first, because no one knows fully what that means in the first place. But the way that I go about that, now that I guess the context is out of the way, is archetypal self-psychology is there are these patterns. There are four cornerstones. One of them behaves like a king. It is a sovereign personality trait that everyone has. There is a warrior part of us, there is a magician part of us, and there is a lover part of us. And I feel that one of the most successful series that I've seen before is the Last Airbender And it capitalized on this concept that to be a whole human being, they're not explicitly saying this, but to be a whole human being, to be the chosen avatar, you have to master the four elements based off of the way that humanity's always been. Those are the four elements. The four quarters of the world, the four winds, they're the four cornerstones of the human psyche. And they've always found a way to express themselves in our culture, no matter where we are in the world, throughout all of history. And it is awesome because we can, after having observed that those are consistent, we can count on leveraging that in our favor. So the primary researchers that have figured this out and have put a lot of work out there with these four archetypes are Dr. Robert Moore and one of his very close friends, Douglas Gillette. And they've co-authored a number of books. The first one is called King, Warrior, Magician, Lover. They figured out that they were the king, the warrior, magician, lover. Other people have talked about it beforehand. They've contributed to there being four archetypes, but they couldn't quite put their fingers on which ones it was. And they figured out that, like with Freud called, and today we use libido for a very narrow description, but Jung saw that libido was just life energy from the soul, from the unconscious. And since Freud was like, oh, the unconscious is only in the body, we're just animals, Jung was like, no, it's from a lot greater place than that. And libido is a source of life energy from being aligned with what he called the self, with a capital S, the archetype of wholeness that we all have a feel for. And there's another author. I don't think I have the book around on my table. Dang it. Edward Edinger wrote a book called Ego and Archetype, where he mentions that the self that Jung kind of discovered is the imago Dei. It is the image of God. And when we feel the presence of God, when we feel a sacredness about what we are doing, it's because we are cultivating a relationship with the self. And when we feel like the number of times in the Bible or any other sacred book where they've fasted to disconnect from the physical and connect more with the spiritual, they feel a sense of mana. They feel like they're just better filled with spiritual energy, sacred life force. And they can't quite put their finger on what it is. It's libido. It's the same libido that Jung has mentioned. And we don't need to fast to tap into that, though it helps and it magnifies it. But being aligned with the tethers between us and the self allow it to drip feed us the energy that it wants us to have, because it wants to be recognized, like God is a jealous God. So it wants to be like, I feel that, like personally, this is just me. The self is like, it's like the profile or the account, like the profile image of God in the human psyche. Obviously, it's not all of God, because that's not possible. But being made in the image of God, he kind of installed that as the operating system so that we could leverage it in our favor. And we just usually don't hear that that's the program. We don't learn that from anywhere, like we probably should. I don't like using the word should, but that's a pretty strong suggestion. So yeah, so in the self, I know this, as I've been rambling, the self is the archetype of wholeness. It's the full image. It is divided into four. Those are the four archetypes, the four cornerstones. We are, I would say, obligated to build a relationship with each of those four independently. So there are traits of the king that we can study, the sovereign or the queen, if you're a woman. If you study those traits and you start to apply those and see in your life and experience all the ways that prove that to be true, you start building and cultivating a relationship with the sovereign in your life. Same thing with the warrior, the magician, the lover. And sure enough, I've found that there's a structure and a map to all of this where, like, if we imagine the sovereign is up, The magician is down. The warrior is to our left, and the lover is to our right. Generally, the right is seen as the favored one. And the left is necessary, but it's the not so comfortable one. Well, embodying traits of a warrior is always uncomfortable. And the lover brings beauty and flavor and sweetness to life, brings very necessary medicine-like bitterness to our life for us to better appreciate the sweet. And if you are over concentrated in the lover, for example, you are very likely not to have much warrior energy and a poor relationship there. So it's like it always checks out. It's for some reason this structure always, it finds itself to be like, it's self-evident, and we all have some kind of experience with it, and we're like, oh my god, like that, I had no idea that was the way that it worked, but it always works that way. That's what makes it archetypal, is that it is the foundation. Everyone has a base on this, and on top of that foundation is our individual experiences that add up to different. You never experienced that, so you can't say you understand. Well, if it's archetypal, we can relate. That's the point. And again, one thing that comes to mind, if you build a relationship with the king, for example, and you cultivate a lot of sovereign energy in yourself, the sovereign archetype, the pattern itself, will see that and appreciate you for giving it attention and for building that relationship. And it will send you energy. It's like a cable or a pipe. And if you have damage in that part of yourself, it's like the pipe is leaking. And because it wants to feed you that energy, because it knows it gets attention and appreciation when you express its brilliance, it wants to send you that energy. It wants to be alive. It wants to feel alive through you. So, and of course we want to feel that energy. It feels amazing. It is like the source of life. So when you start to act like a warrior, even though it's uncomfortable, even though it's not fun, there are physiological benefits. If you go on a run every morning, obviously you get your cardio, you get serotonin, whatever, endorphins, but psychically you start to tap into warrior energy. And you start getting drip fed glowing red warrior juice and it stays with you. That becomes a part of you. And you get to hold on to that because you know for a fact that you are that person that can do that. And there is a bulletproof confidence that comes with that. And that applies to all four of them. Like my most natural connection is with the magician. I mean, that's why I've even studied this stuff in the first place. Technically, this is like, for the most part, none of this is appealing to people, right? Like, this isn't very marketable content. But the magician is the one who goes deep, and it is the depth. It's the blackness, like the bottom part of the ocean that I mentioned earlier. None of that's fun. It's cold. It's uncomfortable. It sucks. You do that work in the dark, like in the middle of the night when you got anxiety about all this stuff that you don't want to face. That's it. That's the magician. He's like, this is my jam. This is where I do my work.
Get a spell. This has been amazing, and it's interesting. You shared passionately and completely, and I was making some notes on the way because there's so much that you touched on. I mean, even with the understanding of the archetypes and the study of differences, and then also looking at things that make us different. As one form of study, and then looking at things that are fundamentally making us, aligning us, our similarities, and that being the other side of study. And I resonate with what you're saying with archetypes. What you're saying not only sounds true and right, it feels true and right. And that I think is part of when we talked before this meeting and before this interview, and there was a connection there, and that almost was informed by understanding there's an archetypal connection there, you know, if that makes sense.
Exactly.
And I just wanted to pick up on, well, not pick up, but expand on. I love the metaphor of the ocean because it is so true. You know, we think of icebergs and, you know, the tip of the iceberg and the bottom. Sure. the bottom cavern. But your metaphor of sunlight only going so far into the ocean is powerful, because that also informs the impression that we give or the impression that we get from others, because there's only so far down the water can penetrate. And then even just the metaphor of or the analogy of the magician working in those depths where you don't know whether you're up or down, left or right, all your senses are disoriented because you're so deep.
Too. It's high pressure. It's hard to breathe.
Yeah.
It all checks out. Like even the metaphor is like, it's deep.
Yeah. So I wanted you to touch on some of the, and I don't know which archetype this leads into, maybe more the warrior type, in terms of understanding that what you've outlined is definitely something worth researching. We'll make a note that people can find that information out. What's a practical application of where these show up and how two people in whatever context, it could be a couple, it could be a spouse, it could be an intimate relationship, it could be a work relationship, it could be family dynamic. How do the archetypes show up, and what's maybe a practical application of understanding them?
The first one, the dynamic that comes to mind is the king. What it means to be king, because if we're going based off of the, we were made in the image of God, the first thing God said it was not good in Genesis was for man to be alone. And if we were made in the image of God, it meant God's not good alone. Like it's not good for God to be alone. So making us in that image, if God is a good king, then for us to be good kings, we are to make people in our image. And for us to cultivate sovereignty, we are to raise people to be good kings and queens. If we, and everyone knows this on a gut level, if you are just raising people to boss them around, to make them your slaves, to have authority over them, you are not a real leader. It's not just that you are a bad leader, no. You're not a leader. You are a slave because you are enslaving people. You are what you do. So if you cultivate people's sovereignty and their individuality and their creativity, you are a good leader because you lead good leaders. It goes all the way up and all the way down. Then the design for the warrior is he understands. It's interesting. I was just watching a interview between Grant Cardone and Mike Tyson. And if we can say that anyone in the world is a warrior, that's dang Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
He said he always saw himself as a product. And I thought that's kind of pessimistic. Like I was like, this is really cool. Cause I had never imagined that before. And he was like, it's just, when I go into the ring, it's just business. Like I'm not, if I was put up against my mom, she's getting a beat down. He was like, I don't ever allow myself to bring emotions into the ring because this is business. I am a product and I will do what I have been assigned to do. That's how I make my money. That's how it works. And the warrior archetype thrives off of discomfort, and it is juiced up knowing that the work never ends. It's like, I don't want it to just give me more. Give me more of this. And it needs more work to do. Like I said, it thrives off of discomfort, and it's also cold like the magician. So it needs, it does that work in the dark. It loves focusing on the process. It loves the process. That's why he doesn't want the work to ever end. He's not goal oriented. He's like, this is what I do now. This is the present moment. The warrior on the left and the lover to the right, they're both the present moment. It's like the horizon of the earth. If we're looking at the horizon, they're the surface. This is where all the life on the earth, all the human life on the earth takes place. The king, the sovereign, is the highest point in the sky that we look up to. It's the North Star, the vision. The magician is down. It is the digging, the depth. But for the present moment, if the magician is the past, and the king is the future, the present moment is the property of the warrior. All the process that you can hands on right now, there is no other moment than right now. The future and the past are both constructs. Mm-hmm. And the warrior knows that better than anyone. He's like, if I can't do it right now, it doesn't exist and it never will. And then, of course, the lover is like in the current moment. It's going to concerts, being on drugs. It's the experience, this lovely experience. So I guess I'll skip over to the lover. The best source of lover, like really embodied, mature lover content that I've ever seen is the poet Rumi. Gold. Oh, man. There was one of the things I read from Rumi that was, and it's not like I actively read this stuff. You see it online. He said that when you get to the point where you are essentially embodying the lover enough, you could look at a mountain and it's not just green. You see a mountain of rubies because absolutely everything on that mountain, all the things that are alive, all the boring things, they're precious. And there's nothing more precious than being able to, like beauty is in the eye of the beholder, to look at the boring, the mundane, the whatever, the routine, and to see a universe of beauty in it. That is the lover. The lover is just fascinated with everything. If there was one word for the lover, I think it would be wonder. It would be like, oh my God, so beautiful. Just everything. Everything is just overwhelmingly just fabulous. And it's about the present moment. So it's like what's around you right now. It's also very, very conscious that there is no future. It's like what exists? When you just sit back and you're in your mindfulness meditation and you're just like, wow, I never realized how awesome this stuff is. Or you haven't listened to music in a while and you listen to music and it's like, oh man, this hits. Like, this is really good. That's lover juice. That's lover libido. And then
I love your analogies. I gotta jump in there. They are so on point. If I'm dropping my head, it's because I'm just writing things down. How do you spell Rumi?
Yeah, cool. Rumi.
Okay, I thought that was how it was. Some, yeah. Okay, cool. I will definitely look for some of that content. And I definitely resonate with some of that warrior juice. I mean, we got on this call real quick. We were in the moment. It was like,
oh yeah,
let's just do this. Let's just do this now. That's definitely warrior stuff there. And also, just as you're expounding on what you've studied and experienced and share, I'm truly having a sense of wonderment in terms of some of the content that you've shared on this platform. So thank you 100% for that.
Yeah,
it's been a total blast. And I feel like we've just touched the surface. I mean, give me a bit of your background, your own personal background before you got into all this alchemy with with these archetypes. What fires up or what informs Destin?
So I did mention that my most natural archetypal connection is a magician. I've always been like that. In my family, I am a middle child. So I was the mediator. I was the artistic one. So I was kind of the golden child. It's like I was the straight shooter. I couldn't do anything wrong. I was homeschooled for a while. I was actually homeschooled for 6 years and then public schooled for 6 years. I didn't even think about that. That's cool. In high school, I knew I wanted to learn how things work. You mentioned that you were a manager in the IT space. I had gotten into computer tech. I got my A+ certificate because I just wanted to get into IT. I was like, this is inevitable. Like we have to work with computers for the rest of my life. Like this can't go wrong. This is at least perpetually useful. Like I can't waste my understanding of computers and technology. So I got into IT. I got A+ certified. I tried getting Network Plus certified and Security Plus certified. It just didn't work. I was not having it. I hate software. And I found that because I like hardware and I hate software, I was like, how am I supposed to cultivate any kind of career in IT if I hate software? And that made me think like, okay, so if if hardware is what I like, because to me it just naturally makes sense and software doesn't, how does that apply to the rest of what I know in life? Like how can I leverage my preference for hardware in a way that benefits me and also serves other people? And I didn't know how to pick that up in life. So there was a relationship I was in at the time after graduation. There was a breakup, and because it was going on for a few years, I was just totally invested into that and I didn't see it coming. So I was like, why? After the breakup, I was like, who even am I? What do I want? Because I was so heavily invested into this. I was the relationship. Like my identity was that, and I felt hollow. So I was like, what even is there? Like, I gotta start digging. I better start digging fast, because there ain't nothing right there. So there was a personality test that we were given in my AP government and economics class. And I was like, you know, I remember there being some kind of like 13 personality something. So I just looked that up. It brought me to the 16 personalities page. I got into Myers-Briggs. I started studying all of the, when I took the test, every one of those answers was wrong and I didn't know it. So I started off with a very healthy mistrust of personality tests, which very quickly cemented that I needed to learn it on my own and figure it out. Cause I was like, I don't know if, man, personalities might change over time. They may not. I don't understand how this works. I figured mine out pretty quick. And then I started getting into, okay, let me learn about everyone else's, because if this is this insightful for me, there's no way I'm not learning this about everyone else. Like, this is magic. So I got really deep into that. Meanwhile, at that point in time, I got into finance because it was like Primerica. I know Primerica is a lot more well known. So it was some kind of life insurance. I think it was WFG. It was a life insurance sales group that I was a part of. I learned finances, and then it dawned on me, it occurred to me that I got into IT because I felt that it was inevitable. You have to learn this in life. And I was like, oh, finances is like that too, isn't it? So I got really into finances. Especially real estate investing. And then I started picking up on drop shipping and foreign exchange trading, and I was just getting around. I was like, well, if ultimately I want to be self-employed, and I didn't know at the time I wanted to be a business owner, but I was like, self-employment, I don't want to have to count on anyone in particular. I hate sending in my resume and then, you know, begging for a job. I want to be so useful that I could do work for myself and just call it a day, and, like, you know, just kind of build a career on whatever I want. So for the most part, my two biggest interests have been finances, like economic type stuff, and no, finances. Economics is on too big of a scale. So investing, idea, strategy, really, and personality. So if I look at finances as a strategy in the world, that was my extroverted satisfaction. And then personality was my introverted satisfaction, my reflective, so that both bases were covered. So it gave me something to look forward to and stay anchored to on the outside, because I am an introvert. Introvert does not have anything to do with social preference. Introvert, extrovert, stereotypically, those are do you like people? Do you like parties? Or do you like alone time? No, introverts are reflective first. They are more naturally, they have a hard time taking action. They have to force themselves into taking action. Extroverts are naturally action takers. They have to force themselves to reflect. So to, like I said, to have all my bases covered, finances and personality were my things. I didn't know why, now I do. And then I got into Enneagram. Enneagram is an even more complete, like, I always hated imagining that with how much I love Myers-Briggs, that it was incomplete. Because I was like, I can't imagine anything else. Why would it be incomplete? Yeah, it's incomplete. It's very, like, it's pretty shallow compared to everything that it could be. But when people have asked me, do you prefer Myers-Briggs or Enneagram? Now I say Enneagram, but they're complementary. Myers-Briggs shows you what brain you were born with, the software, your firmware, and then Enneagram is what trauma you adopted on the way. And it's who you become through the false reality that you accepted as truth when you were little and who has formed you as a person from that point on.
Wow.
Both are necessary. Both are pretty big deal. And then from there, I got into the archetype stuff and I'm like, oh, this is a lot of cross-referencing between these three I could do. But ultimately, I mean, I've gone through a couple, like my most recent job was car sales because I was like, well, I need warrior practice. I'm good with my king stuff. I'm great with my magician stuff. And my lover's okay. My lover's doing good. I hate using the warrior. I hate it. And when I started reading about the stuff about the warrior, I was like, I don't have any of these traits. This archetype stuff must be completely wrong. And then the very next chapter, it said, if you are disconnected with this and you don't feel that this is a part of you, this is exactly what you need to focus on. And that's on you. I was like, oh, I hate it. And that's the point. It's called shadow work. That's what Jung called shadow work is. Shadow is the part of you that you hate. It's the part that you don't want to accept. That's exactly it. The less you want to work on it, the less you accept it as true. That's exactly what you got to focus on.
Absolutely. This is great. This is, oh man. I'm up against a time crunch, but I hope people listening to this either live or on the replay really can hear what I'm picking up on is your deep love of finding things out and also being almost kind of meta in terms of not only just taking it on the face value, but actually looking at why it works and how it works and how it can be applied. And that's a testament to the magician getting the work done, you know, in terms of really going in below the layers and seeing how it can apply. How do you help people, or how can you help people with what you've learned and what you practice? In what ways can you help them? And also, how can they find you? We can wrap up with those two things.
Sure. on Facebook, it's Destin Scott. LinkedIn, it's Destin Scott. On Instagram, it's at official Destin Scott. It's Destin Scott everywhere. And then, so right now I'm actually building a challenge funnel, you know, the very overly popular 5-day challenge that people invite you to on Facebook. But I'm doing that. I'm making it dense so that it's, if you take that challenge and you never go through my coaching, you are set for life. And additionally, adding on the coaching is just a being adopted into the ecosystem that I'm building. All of this stuff that I'm building is the first significant time that people have heard this in the public since maybe 2016 when Robert Moore had passed. This stuff has been for the most part lost for 30 or 40 years. And I mean, I've got, if whoever wants it, I've got an archive of hundreds of hours of Robert Moore stuff on audio tapes, but it takes time to listen to that. And most people don't want to spend the time, but it's free. It's open source. I mean, like I'm not going to hold that back from anyone. If anyone wants the link, I'll give them my archive. But I do the coaching for people who want dialogue because this matters. We've gone over more in this single hour than most people are going to get from this over however long. I took the time to listen to those for 9 months when I was working at Walmart as an overnight stalker. 8 hours a night, 9 months. That was what I had to do. And I loved it. And yeah, so to condense that answer, I'm building out a Facebook challenge so that over those 5 days, it accounts for the onboarding process for my coaching stuff. If people just come up to me and say, hey, I want to get into your coaching, I'll just turn around and say, hey, join my five day challenge, because I'm going to go over this stuff onboarding you anyway. Just be there. And that will account for the onboarding. It'll account for the foundation. My coaching as it starts, I have that called temenos. Temenos is the Greek word for sacred foundation. And that's exactly what it is. My email is destin@hierophany.com. Hierophany is the Greek word for the manifestation of the sacred. And that's what I do. And then I have higher level stuff for specifically leadership. So there's the temenos, which is for the foundation. For all of this, just to give you the basic groundwork and understanding the model so that you can continue on your own if you want. The higher levels are specifically to dig into the sovereign and to teach sovereign stuff. As you could tell, I was lit up by the sovereign stuff. Yeah. The king is the reflection of his kingdom, and that can only be healthy if the other three are optimized, the warrior, the magician, the lover. So the king is mm-hmm. all four. So by committing to the sovereign, you are committing to the whole kingdom. That's it. You are dedicated to be a whole person. Mm. And that is what I love. So I teach that for leaders if they want. Of course, they can include their families if they want, but and then higher up than that, I teach coaching for that for their teams, for their whole, like they get the leadership level stuff, the sovereign specific stuff for them and their leadership, and the Temenos level membership for their whole team.
That is awesome. This is gold. This is good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to have to listen back to re-quote you on some of this stuff. There's some good things in there. I hope people stuck it out. It's a bit longer than my usual sort of 30-minute-ish, and I didn't mind going over because you definitely... I gave you the platform to share what you had, and there's a mine shaft full of rubies. I mean, you mentioned the analogy of the mountain of rubies, and there's some amazing things in what you shared. And I know there's more to come in terms of just, you know, we're just scratching the surface here. We'll have links to some of the content, books, things that Destin had shared. Destin, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you for the platform.
Thanks for joining me today. Please subscribe and leave a review. You can connect with me on LinkedIn. My details and links are in the show notes.